John, we're going to try to make it to the end of the chapter, which means we're going to skip over a few things in there. But let me use the fact that I'm skipping over some things just for a second for a commercial. Not this week, but the following week. It's my own plan to, on Thursday night, to begin just a midweek Bible study. So that'll happen on Thursday night. I'm calling it Signs of Life. Hopefully there'll be some of those there. But I just want us to consider and wonder about and talk together about, study, perhaps some of those things in the Gospel of John that we're not focusing on so much during the teaching time here on Sunday. So some notes and footnotes to the Gospel of John. I mean, if I just make one commercial for the kind of thing we might be doing, we're to the point in the story of the woman at the well where the disciples have come back. They've been in town picking up Subway or something, and they come back. And the text says that when the disciples return, they are amazed. They marvel that Jesus is talking to a woman. But that nobody says anything. Nobody says, "What do you seek?" or "Why are you talking to her?" So none of the disciples are amazed, but they don't say anything. So is it a good thing or a bad thing that the disciples don't say anything? You know, should they have asked, kind of like, "Well, what's the deal with her?" You know, or "What do you think you're doing?" Should they have done that? Or is it good that they don't rush in with either criticism or question or comment? Okay, they're amazed, but they just hold off. You know, the master usually knows what he's doing, so don't rush to judgment. So just stay quiet, perhaps. You know, so should they have asked, or is it good that they didn't rush in? You know, did they want to criticize? You know, were they thinking, it's kind of neat in English, "We like some awe," as in awesome, awesome. But we don't like anything to be full of awe, because then it's awful, right? So, you know, do the disciples just have some awe and it's awesome to them and they think it's really neat? Or do they think it's awful and they wish to criticize? Are they too set on their own agenda that they don't want to get sidetracked, so don't bring up that whatever he's doing now so that we can get on with our own business? Kind of like, what's going on there? So it's that kind of thing that we won't focus on here on Sundays. But we would maybe pick something like that up from the text and explore that a little bit as far as how does that type of thing fit into the story. Something else I'm also leaving out today is the woman goes off to the city. She tells a bunch of people that, you know, there might be a guy here who's the Christ. He told me everything that I ever did. And so there's a whole crowd of people coming back to see Jesus. And you have to picture this crowd coming out of the city towards the well. And Jesus and the disciples can probably see them coming. And while they're coming, there's a conversation between Jesus and his disciples about sowing and reaping. Jesus talks about how some sow and others reap. And sometimes the person who sows is not the one who reaps. And the one who reaps is not the person who did the sowing. And if you read the story carefully, you find out that God the Father is working. And Jesus the Son is working. And the disciples are working. And the woman herself is working. And all of those people are sowing in the story. And now here comes a crowd of people, like there's a harvest already. There's some wages being reaped. In the discussion, you find out that the gathering of the harvest, both in all its dimensions, becomes this interdependent, intertwined, interrelated happening. I mean, it's a wonderful picture for how I would like us to be as a fellowship. Who sowed and who reaped and who did what? All those things get intertwined and interrelated. And maybe John sowed and Jordan reaped. Or maybe Jordan sowed and Melissa reaped. Maybe the two of them sowed and somebody not even present here reaps. That type of picture of how the sowing and the reaping, the gathering of the harvest takes place. So we would explore something like that and just talk about that and maybe even turn it to thought about how should that connect up to us as a fellowship and what does it look like that, you know, sometimes you just join alongside somebody else who's sowing and sometimes you're reaping although you didn't plant anything here, etc. So that's the kind of thing we will do on Thursday night. At the end, there will be a sign-up sheet in the back, just so I can have some idea of how many might be interested. We would actually meet down at our new fellowship center. We don't know what to call it yet. Right around the corner, to which you are all invited after our potluck, just to walk through and see it. It's a really neat space. We're excited about it. Feels like a blessing from the Lord. So we would meet there on Thursday night. If you're interested in that, just sign up so we have some read about how many. So for today, I'd like to call attention to two things in John chapter 4. I think these two things are similar to each other. One of them is from the story of the woman at the well. And the second comes from the following story that occurs right at the end of chapter 4. It's the story of the nobleman's son who is sick, and the nobleman himself comes to Jesus and seeks Jesus to come heal my son. He's at the point of death, come before he dies and heal him. And Jesus just speaks a word, and the nobleman goes home, and servants come and meet him halfway and say, "Your son is getting better," and he inquires about the time and finds out that it's the same time Jesus spoke the word that the son got better. So I'm going to pick something from that story and show it to you. But first, out of the story of the woman at the well, we read this. The woman goes back to the city, and from that city, many of the Samaritans believed in him because of the word of the woman who testified, "He told me all the things that I have done." So this woman goes back to the city. She tells a bunch of the citizens of the city, "This guy told me all the things I've ever done. Could he be the Christ?" And it says here that many of the people in the city believed in Jesus because of the word of the woman, her testimony about Jesus. And because these folks believe, they go out and want to go out and see Jesus, and they do. And they ask Jesus to stay for a couple of days. But then after a couple of days, we get this. So when the Samaritans came to Jesus, they were asking him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. Many more believed because of his word, and they were saying to the woman, "It is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world." So these people who believed at first on the testimony of the woman, they go out to see Jesus and ask Jesus to stay a couple days. He does. But then it says, now we believe, not because we heard about Jesus from the woman's testimony, but because we've heard him ourselves. So we believe just because, we've heard him ourselves and we know that he's the Savior of the world. Now go to the next story, get something very similar. Jesus goes on from this town in Samaria up to Galilee, and there's the nobleman, and he comes and pleads for Jesus to come and heal his son. And we read this. The royal official said to him, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Jesus said to him, "Go, your son lives." The man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and started off. So Jesus says, "Just go, your son's okay." And the guy believes him. And so he turns to go back home. But then on the way home, this is what happened. As he was going back home, his slaves met him, saying that his son was living. So he inquired of them the hour which he began to get better. Then they said to him, "Yesterday at the 7th hour, the fever left him." So the father knew that it was at that hour in which Jesus said to him, "Your son lives." And he himself believed, in his whole household. So here at first in the story, the guy believed just because Jesus gave him his word that your son will get better. And the guy believed him, and in the expression of that is he starts going home. But then when servants meet him halfway on his way home, he inquires of his servants, "When did my son start getting better?" He says, 1 o'clock yesterday. He says, "That's exactly when Jesus was talking to me." And so then the text says that he believed because of what the servants report. And not only that he believed, but his whole household. So in both of these stories, if I've given them to you well enough, in both cases there's genuine believing, right? In the story of the woman at the well, others believe in Jesus because of the woman's testimony. And in the story of the nobleman's son, the nobleman believes when Jesus gives his word. But then the believing gains like an additional dimension. I'm not even quite sure what to call it. But the believing is increased or deepened or strengthened or something like that. Those who believed from the woman's testimony, they hear Jesus for themselves. And then they say, now we believe because of what we ourselves have heard and not just from your testimony. Or in the story of the nobleman's son, he hears the report from his servants and he realizes it has happened just like Jesus said it was going to happen. And it says, no, he believed. So his faith gets strengthened or deepened or something like that when he finds out it took place just like Jesus said. Okay, so now remember, or if you didn't know for the first time, that in the Gospel of John, John always uses the verb believe. He never uses the noun faith. Just one of the characteristics of his writing. He never uses the noun belief or faith. He always talks about believing. That's because his concern is not whether or not we have a thing. You know, do you have faith? Do you have faith in your closet? You know, that's not John's concern. Not that he thinks that's wrong or inaccurate, but his concern is not do you have some noun? Do you have something? John's concern is always, are you living? Are you acting in a believing manner? I just try to generate an analogy. John doesn't care whether or not you have a coat. He wants to know whether or not you're wearing the coat, whether you're doing something with it. That's his concern. That's why he always uses a verb. He doesn't care if you've got a coat 16 years ago if you've never worn it. He wants to know, are you wearing it today? So John's concern is always with that believing response in word and in action. And so just a couple of points from these two similar events in these two stories. I think sometimes it's necessary, sometimes it's right for faith to arise in us because of the testimony of others. That others bear witness of God. Others bear some type of testimony of God. They talk about His provision. They talk about His grace. They talk about the working of His power. They talk about His care, or something like that. They bear testimony to that. And then you believe on the basis of their testimony. I see the Chews sitting back there. Maybe the Chews come back and they give a report of the things God's doing in Asia. Now they talk about how God's greatly moving. And you believe those things that God is doing because of their report. You know, maybe you haven't yourself been to Asia, but you hear about those things through their testimony. And it stirs faith. It stirs a believing response in your heart. So maybe you hear from others, you know, the Lord can see you through a valley. And when you hear that testimony from others, you believe. You know, the Lord is able to reveal your path. Well, maybe you're trying to find direction or understanding about something and somebody just bears testimony. The Lord is able to give revelation about the direction you should go. Maybe somebody says simply, the Lord is good and His mercies endure forever. I'm just bearing testimony to that. You hear that testimony, it stirs a faithful response in your heart. But then, after that, you've heard that testimony, you believe, but then maybe you experience yourself directly. The Lord works or accomplishes the thing in your own life. He sees you through the valley. He reveals the path that you need to take. He shows mercy in ways that are unmistakable to you. And then you might say, you know what, now I believe, not just because I heard it from the Jews, or heard it from some friends or some brothers and sisters. I mean, I've experienced it from the Lord Himself, so I believe. So sometimes that type of movement where is important for us, where first we believe just on the testimony of others. Sometimes we have a pressing need. Use the second story now. And we hear the Lord speak to the need. And we believe His word. We believe it will be so. He says in some ways, kind of, in that pressing need, I will take care of you. I will give you healing. I will provide. You know, I'll direct you. You got a pressing need. Some word from the Lord. I'm going to help you with that. And you believe His word. Believe what He says. But then you see that promise from the Lord, that word from the Lord get fulfilled. The need gets met somehow. And that, when it gets met, it stirs in you not simply the knowledge or the understanding that the Lord can meet the need. Now you know that. He's met it. You know, He's done something. But it causes you to know something about the Lord Himself. That story of the nobleman. First, he's thinking about his son. Can my son get better? And Jesus says, go your way, your son lives. I mean, he's thinking my son's going to get better, right? That's what he believes. He believes that Jesus can make his son better and it's going to happen. But when his servants tell him, kind of like your son got better, and then it says that he believes, he's probably not thinking of his son. He already knows his son is fine. Cool. But he's thinking something about Jesus himself, right? Something about who Jesus is. So he hears that report, and the believing gets directed to an understanding of Christ himself. So just kind of simple by way of application. Ask yourself, where is it good? Where is it perhaps needed for you to just to hear the testimony of others? And let that stir in you a believing response. That testimony could be from the Apostle John, or from David in one of the Psalms, or from Jeremiah. It could come from somebody who's, let's say, around a long time ago who bore testimony to the Lord. And you read that Psalm, you read that thing in the Gospel of John. On the basis of that testimony, you believe. It stirs faith in you. That testimony could come from the person sitting next to you. You know, and say, I was in a situation like you're in, and the Lord is able to meet that need. So the Lord is good. You know, He won't forget you, or whatever that testimony of the person sitting next to you is. And when you hear that testimony, it's good for you to believe. So where is it good for you to hear the testimony of others about the Lord and respond in a believing way? And so first you believe because of the testimony. And of course, maybe a little ways down the road, you're going to believe because the Lord has worked it in you directly, worked it in your experience directly. So just where might that apply in your own walk in life right now? And then secondly, where do you need to believe that the Lord can help with the situation or with the need, with the happening? You say, you know, Lord, help me with my son. Help me with my friend. Help me with my job. Help me with my health. You know, it's good for you to believe, understand that the Lord can help you with the need. But then when the Lord helps with the need, when He helps in the situation, you know, when He answers the prayer, it's time for you to understand and believe something about who He is, about the ways that He takes. And not just about, oh cool, I got my need met, and that is cool, and it's important. But now it turns your believing response to a confession about Him, an understanding about Him. So maybe where is that type of dynamic going on? So that's kind of simple, but I just wanted to call your attention to, it's a neat thing in John. John never says, oh, he believed, end the story, let's move on to the next chapter. Oh, these people who believe, first it's by testimony. First it's connected to some need. But then it gets deepened and it gets strengthened. And it doesn't say something different. It just said, well, they believe. But that belief now is deeper or strengthened because it's gone some distance, or it's been connected to the Lord directly. Or it was kind of directed towards a situation and now it's got you thinking about Himself. And your eyes turn towards Him. Don't neglect the way it starts. If you are the person who says, well, I'm not going to believe until Jesus talks to me Himself. I'm not going to take Carl's report, Carl's testimony. Well, if you don't hear Carl's testimony, you might not respond in a believing way and go out and find Jesus because Carl told you where He is. So you never have that direct response if you don't take Carl's testimony. So maybe there are places where you have to hear it on testimony first. It sends you to the place where you find the Lord Himself. It's just an important dynamic for all of us in walking by faith. And then secondly, you know, that nobleman's son, you know, as you encounter the Lord answering prayer and meeting needs and showing paths and demonstrating His power and His glory and His strength and His love, not just about needs met anymore. It's about believing and understanding himself. So I hope that just stirs your thought. That'll take us next time. We'll move to chapter 5.